Welcome to Parents Perspective. Dennis, Holly called in her loudest voice. Time to clean up and get moving. Dennis, we really have to get going. Holly came clumping up the stairs to her 9-year-old son's room, where he was absorbed in playing with his toy soldiers. She sighed to no one in particular. What do I do now? Honey, her husband Ed put his hand on her shoulder. Remember, Dennis just doesn't pull all those sounds together so well yet. We gotta have patience. Well, Holly grumped, mine is really running out. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about sound therapy? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest worked for more than 40 years as an educational rehabilitative audiologist. Doreen Davis is founder and president of the Davis Center and Davis Sound Research Associates, LLC. The Davis Center uses a unique program called the Diagnostic Evaluation for Therapy Protocol, or DETP, to identify core issues in learning, development, and wellness for people of all ages. Remedial and enhancement therapies address challenges related to autism, ADHD, APD, apraxia, dyslexia, Down syndrome, Williams syndrome, learning disabilities, central auditory processing disorders, and other learning attention focus related skills. Doreen is the mother of 2 grown children and has 1 grandson. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Doreen.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be here.
I guess we need to begin with, what is sound therapy?
What I do is related to individual sound. So what that means, in the field of what we call sound therapy, there are probably 3 divisions. The first one is more an out there kind of a thing, which is more sound healing types of techniques that you may have seen at holistic fairs. The next level is called sound therapy, and that is going to be using things like tuning forks and crystal bowls, and they have been found to help specific wellness challenges. But what I do is called sound-based therapy. Sound-based therapy uses special equipment, but has to use the power of sound and vibration with special programs, specific music, modified musical patterns, and or tones or beats, and the need for which is identified with appropriate testing. And that's where my diagnostic evaluation comes in. I've been able to use that diagnostic evaluation to determine if, when, how long, and in what order anyone with any type of a learning, development, or a wellness challenge can have sound-based therapy appropriately applied.
What kinds of kids are good candidates for this kind of therapy?
Because sound-based therapy can be used with anyone of any age. The first people I begin with are those that are in utero. And your ear is your only sensory system that's fully functioning in utero at 4.5 months. And the ear is really primary, not just for your hearing, but how you integrate all your sensory stimulation. So in utero, by stimulating early on and throughout the pregnancy, a good foundation for how we receive sound vibration. The child has got a head start on listening and attending and focusing in life. And then it runs the gamut for various types of listening or sound process and or sense of hearing issues. Perhaps this is a good time for me to explain so I can better answer your question, what I now call the Davis model of sound intervention. What this model is it encompasses 3 categories. One is that there are 5 laws that connect your voice, your ear, and your brain. Your voice produces what your ear hears. And if you think about how simple that is, it has major implication for just about everyone. Now, the best way you can understand the voice produces what the ear hears, I am eliminating the frequencies in my voice because I do not hear those frequencies to therefore be able to best articulate them. Well, each one of us has some degree that we are not utilizing the sound as we receive it appropriately. And so the voice can demonstrate that. I measured the output of the ear. Most people don't know we emit a sound with our ear, but we do. And I connected the output of the ear and the output of the voice that are in stress as far as frequencies go, specific frequencies, 100%. To me, it was a major telling of this connection between the voice, the ear, and the brain. And all five laws tell you if you reintroduce the sound to your ear, your voice is going to regain the necessary frequencies to produce naturally. The second one is that every cell structure in your body gives out and takes in a sound. We don't realize it because we only think of hearing as what our ear is picking up, but we do emit and take in sound with our cells.
Is this the kind of thing where animals only hear a certain pitch and that kind of thing, that they can hear more acutely than we do?
We as humans can hear up to about 20,000 cycles per second, and animals can hear beyond that. But there are other ways that we take in sound with our body. So if all these cells give out and take in sound, imagine your body as a series of instruments playing a sound. And every instrument in its emission of sound may not be in tune. So we have to, in effect, tune that instrument up. So it's a unique process, but we can then think of ourselves as being our signature symphony of sound. We are constantly giving this give and take of sound. I mentioned earlier that I look at the ear as your global sensory processor, because most people know as sound comes down our ear canal, goes through the middle ear through three little bones, triggers a response in what's called your cochlea and sends the sound to the brain. That's what most people think of. But there's more to the ear, and there's more to how we process vibrational sound, because what you mentioned was hearing. What I'm looking at is waves of sound energy. So I'm not necessarily thinking of hearing. I'm thinking of movement of energy. So imagine these waves just going and going, and it's an energy pulsing. So now this energy of sound waves are coming down the ear canal. Yes, they can trigger particular hair cells in the cochlea to send it to the brain, but it's also going to be vibrating everything else around us. You've probably seen people at football games doing the wave. They stand up, and by the time the last one gets done, the first one is seated again, and then they want to start over again. Well, imagine that kind of a wave system in your ear. So the sound is coming down the ear. It's triggering the cochlea, but there's other parts to the ear. For example, the part of the ear called the semicircular canals is going to be responsible for your balance and your coordination and your muscle tone, your eye-hand connectedness, your body and time and space, or where do you want to put yourself? And you have all these waves pulsing through this ear, triggering all of these body responses.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on sound-based therapy.
Popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Doreen Davis about sound-based therapy. I'm wondering whether that means that our body responses are different, for example, in utero, where there's barriers and you're underwater and all that kind of thing, and when we're talking about older people whose sense of balance is different and whose actual hearing is different. So it seems there are an awful lot of factors that are coming into this.
There are so many factors. The balance and the coordination is very important to the type of child that I work with. The sound now is pulsing through all the ear. Now, we have 12 cranial nerves, and 10 of them pass through your ear.
And this is cranial meaning in the skull, right?
Yes, and they go up and down. They traverse all throughout your whole body. It's what triggers our neurological responses. Those cranial nerves support us in all of our use. But 10 of them go through the ear. So I researched what those nerves were doing, and I narrowed it to 4 nerves that I seemed to impact more than others. 2 of the nerves stimulate your facial area, especially your sense of taste and smell, your jaw and muscle movement, lip movement, tongue movement, back of the throat, anything that has to do with eating or speaking. A 3rd nerve runs down to your larynx and your pharynx. And so if you think about that,
do you want to talk about what the larynx and pharynx are for those of us who forgot our biology?
It's your voice box. That's right. It's where we produce sound. Thank you. So those things alone help us to look back to that voice-ear-brain connection through the anatomical use of the nervous system. Right? Then there's a 4th nerve that's very important. It's nicknamed your wandering nerve because it literally wanders throughout our body and touches our organs. So now if you think back to that wave at the football game, the wave of pulsing sound going through our ear is going to trigger these nerves that I mentioned, and we are going to be triggering nervous impulse by sound vibration to our entire body. So I can make change with vibrational sound to just about all areas of the body. And now, if we go back to the ear again, the ear is surrounded by the hardest bone of the body. And it's your hardest bone of the body, in my opinion, for 2 main reasons. One is protecting your sensory system. Because if we look at what the nerves are doing, the 8th nerve is taking your hearing, but then I mentioned your taste and smell and your eye already with those 2 that impact your face. And we have also the sense of touch through those same 2 nerves, especially around your head, around your ear. And so there are children that I see that are always impacted by a lot of these sensory types of things. Developmentally, in utero, when the ear forms, it comes right out of your skin layer. So we have all of this sensory connection.
When somebody brings a child to you for sound therapy, what do you do with the vibrational sound or the other means?
Let me just put this last piece in place, which is bone conduction. Around the ear with this bone, it is the hardest bone of the body. And because we know that we can vibrate sound and pick up sound through the bone vibration surrounding you, you can be standing anywhere and you're going to feel sound. It comes right through your bone structure to your ear. Now let's move into what is it that we do with people and how do I identify it? Well, that's where my diagnostic evaluation comes in. It was modeled after something that I call the tree of sound enhancement therapy. Well, the tree became the model for helping me use it as a developmental flowchart for the administration of therapies. The root system of the tree is going to be related to your sense of hearing. When a child or a person, because I work with people of all ages, if they come to me and they have over-responsiveness to sound, the type of child, for example, that covers their ear, the child that doesn't want to be around loud noise, the child who gets upset when you're in a commercial bathroom that has the hand dryers, blowers going full steam, the child who doesn't like having a baby sister or brother crying, those are children who have sound sensitivities. Over the years, though, I have discovered that some of the children who have what might be called hyposensitive hearing, meaning tuning out of hearing, are typically those who have hypersensitivity that have learned mentally to block them out.
So they're really protecting themselves,
yes,
in a way.
They have learned how to survive in the world around them, and so they go inward.
Is this the kind of thing where babies may be born more hypersensitive?
There's not definitive research yet, but I have seen numerous cases of women who had many, many, many ultrasounds during the pregnancy have children that are overreactive to sound. Sometimes you can be given medications in pregnancies to support the mother and the child that may have some form of what you call ototoxicity, the impacting the child's development in the ear. And then at birth, you can have things like middle ear infections, for example. I'm thinking the first year of life, middle ear infections was my specialty before I got into sound intervention. But this root system of my tree only addresses one form of hearing hypersensitivity. So the testing is important. When we move, I have a seed of the tree, which is our very basal core rhythms of our body. We don't think we have this sound coming from us, but we use sound all the time. It's our heart rate and our breath stream. And we know that our cell structure also vibrates in various patterns. And so there are different types of therapies that are going to get to our core. And so at this level, a child, for example, with attention deficit disorder may very well benefit from one of the therapies at this level because the rhythms and the patterns of their lifestyle may not jive with the rhythms and the patterns of the person next to them. And if you can bring those rhythms into a better balance, the child will feel much better and function better and pay attention better.
So how do you do that?
Well, for example, the therapy at the root system is going to repattern that muscle in the middle ear that I had done my original research with. And by doing that, you listen for 10 days and you listen for a half an hour in the morning, half an hour in the afternoon to specially chosen music that's going to really aggressively go after the muscle and how it works. When we get into the seed of the tree, I have a few different programs that we use, and one uses drum beats, and it's a recording that is created especially for the person. Everything I do is individualized. Nothing is generic until I get to the top of my tree. But these CDs are made specifically for the child to listen to have their bodies entrain is the technical word. It's kind of like being in sync. You blend your frequencies together with the person next to you, and you just feel better within the world that you're living in. And then when I move into the trunk of the trunk is our very core and our foundation, and it goes to everything I mentioned that goes on in the ear itself. And that therapy, I'm going to be describing the child, for example, who has balance and coordination issues, vestibular issues. Vestibular means how you function with movement and coordination and just feeling together. In case histories, I might see children who fall or trip easily or don't want to be upside down, those kinds of things. Oral motor issues or something, those are the type of children whose tongue may not work as well to formulate speech sounds, or the child who's grinding their teeth a lot because it feels either comfortable, they need that sensation, the child who's drooling or doesn't have good closure of the mouth, who has swallowing issues, those types of things might come into play. Social connectedness, being able to really reach out to the person and look them in the eye, want to play, not just play from the sidelines. They want to actively understand and get involved. A sense of self, who they are and what they are, and feeling good about themselves, I would see at this place.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on sound-based therapy.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Doreen Davis about sound-based therapy.
So this is all really connected somehow with a child's internal rhythms.
Internal rhythms, but also that connection between the voice, the ear, and the brain. It must be balanced in order for us to have this whole person feel good and function normally.
How does someone come to you? Is it usually a pediatrician that says you might want to do this thing? Or how do parents know that this is what they need to do for their child?
I've been putting my process together now for the past 16 years. So we are at the stage now where we're looking to bring it to more people. But currently, people hear me present, hear me on radio shows, or I do my own radio show on Autism One. I also have my website. A lot of people find me from websites. People do refer to me. I have some physicians who refer to me. Otherwise, it's word of mouth. But they do come to me from around the world. So what's nice is if they can't come to me because of whatever their circumstances are, I now have designed it so that I can go to a location when I have a number of people. So I can test that way and I can still support people until I'm at the place where I can begin to duplicate what it is that I need.
What do you recommend be done at home with one's child when not working directly with you?
Now, if I go into the leaves and branches of the trees, that's going to be things that are more what's called auditory processing. That's memory, discrimination, sequencing. There are many excellent programs out there today that encompass that. And then that tree is superimposed on the silhouette of the head. The head therapy is really fascinating in that it takes every cell of your body and identifies where the imbalances are. So the best thing that parents can do to support their child at home would be emphasizing a good connection and a stability between the voice, the ear, and the brain. And one of the things they can do for the developing child early on is to really encourage rhythmical activities, sing-song activities. It's why nursery rhymes are so excellent for babies, why singing is so excellent for babies, why the mother's interaction with the child is so important. And get into the child, get into their face, so to speak, if they don't want to look at you. Engage them as much as you can. Coordinate movement activities with the voice and the sing-song because it helps stabilize that. As the child progresses, what then is important is trying to get them to pull into themselves while expressing themselves. If they can't come for the various therapies or the therapies are not available in their area, although I do offer home therapies now for just about everything, but if you get a person to sit on the edge of their chair, feet flat on the floor, and the back very well supported, and then get them to put their face outward, but jaw just slightly down. So I'm going to imitate and move my position of my face so you'll hear the difference. Right now, I'm in the position that I want to. But if I raise my head, my sound, my voice is a little strained. And if I come back to position, it sounds fine. Or if I put my chin down here, it also sounds strained. But when I come back into position, it sounds fine. You want a good expression of their voice, free flowing. And then if you take your hand, preferably your right hand, and between your thumb and your forefinger, we have that web-like piece of skin. If you make just a slight fist with your hand and you put that web piece of skin up to your mouth, and then you either talk into it or hum into it. You don't want to touch it exactly, but be very close to it. You're vibrating through your whole system. It is not the best way, but it will help support what we call the right ear of the body, which is the main emphasis point to the left hemisphere of the brain, which is our language center. So you're trying to create a natural flow for information that then perhaps will support the person in everyday life. When the child gets to be school age, in addition to what I was just saying, you could also do rhythmical activities, like if you want to use letters to movement and learn how to spell. When you're learning how to spell, for example, you can clap your hands and jump in place and tap your foot, such as R-O-C-K, rock, R-O-C-K, rock. By the movement and the rhythm patterns, your brain is receiving the information. And if you say it at least three times in that pattern, you'll have a better way of remembering it and following through.
We have to close, but before we do, we would like to leave parents and caring adults out there with whatever resources we can give them for this very important and fairly new kind of therapy.
Well, certainly people can check out my website, which is www.thedaviscenter.com. My third book is called Sound Bodies Through Sound Therapy, and they can either get it at their library or it is on Amazon.com. There is another book called Every Day a Miracle, Success Stories with Sound Therapy, that right now is only available on the website, the www.thedaviscenter.com one. My office is in New Jersey, and we are now located in Secasunna, New Jersey, and that phone number is 862-251-4637. I think right now that's the best way. If you're interested in hearing me present on a longer presentation, my website does have where I present around the world. So you never know where I am or where I'm going. So that's the best place to check it out.
But pediatricians might be familiar with this kind of thing?
Pediatricians may be familiar with it. Right now, they know only certain therapies by name, so they may not be as supportive because what happened is a lot of the research, and I'm in the process of trying to put that research together, hasn't been out there. So you will find people who are against what I do, but others who are supportive. For example, the DAN doctors, those are Defeat Autism Now physicians who are trained in specialized approaches. They are typically very familiar with what we do, and they do refer to us. Behavioral optometrists are typically aware of what I do. I've had articles printed in their journals, and so those are good connecting people. Alternative medicine physicians are aware of what I do and do refer. So we are seeing more and more referrals coming from standard sources.
We're certainly very grateful that you've come to us and told us all about what you do. So, Doreen Davis, thank you so much for being with us today and enlightening us about sound therapy.
Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Doreen Davis's book, Every Day a Miracle, Success Stories with Sound Therapy. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show 384. Tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or foundations for their generous donations that help with the cost of producing and distributing Parents' Perspective programs. Parents' Perspective is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Today it is our turn to thank you, our listeners, for your tax-deductible contributions to our annual fundraising campaign. Please send your checks or money orders to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015. Thank you for helping us continue to work for you. Our sound engineer is Nate DeLuca. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.